I remember when Starbucks had its IPO, initial public offering, and I knew this was going to be a big thing. I could just see it. So I took all my savings and I invested it in Starbucks. I would drink 4, 5, 6 cups of Starbucks a day because I knew every cup would make my stock go up just a little bit more. For where your treasure is, there your heart will be also.
Aloha, and welcome to Words of New Hope with Pastor Wayne Cordero of New Hope Christian Fellowship in Honolulu. The Bible has a lot to say about giving, and sometimes when the preacher starts talking about it, we begin to squirm. Well, today's message is all about giving, but as we say in radio biz, don't touch that dial. Pastor Wayne has a message you're not going to want to miss. Here he is with a message entitled, A Generous God.
Well, we've got notes today, so take out your notes. We've got notes right here. Isn't that cool? Hey, you know what I'm finding out? That everything God asks us to do, whether it's to give or to serve or to forgive or whatever it might be, is not for His good, it's for ours. When God says to give, does He need any more?
No.
No. So when God asks us to give, it's not for His sake, it's for our sake. When God asks us to do something that might be challenging to our faith, even testing to our faith, it's not for His good, it's for our good. And we want to talk about that today when it comes to developing a spirit of generosity. A lot of you are brand new to New Hope and you want to know about what's all of this stuff about generosity. We want to talk about that. And often it begins with just the way we think about things. Often we think about the word generosity like, oh, they're trying to manipulate us to get our money. And God doesn't need our money. No, but He needs us to be a part of His program, because in giving, and it's not the act of giving, in giving, it's this process, the heart that has to be matured so it results in this act. But what He's trying to do is develop something here, just like the kids. It's not just their performance, it's everything that leads up to that. And if we don't change our mind towards generosity, what we may do is we will exclude this whole process by which we become more and more like Christ. We got to change our mind. Speaking of that, there's a humorous story. You want to hear it? Doesn't matter. I'm going to tell it anyway because I like it. This man went to this doctor and he was not feeling good. So he said, "Doctor, what's wrong with me?" Well, after a battery of tests, the doctor came out scratching his head and he said, I don't have good news for you. You got a year to live." The man said, "A year to live? That's it." He said, "No way, I'm going to talk to my pastor, because my pastor, he'll give me, you know, some good advice and some straight answers." So he went to his pastor and then repeated the scenario of what the doctor said about his lifespan. "You got a year to live." And he said, "Pastor, what do I do?" Pastor said, "Well, here's what I think you can do." He said, "What?" "You got to do 3 things. "What?" "I'll do it." He said, "Well, first you got to buy a broken down old junk pickup." "Okay, and then what?" "And then you got to marry the homeliest, ugliest, crankiest woman you could ever find." He said, "Okay, and then what?" "And then you got to buy a trailer house and move into a dingy trailer park." He said, "Pastor, will that lengthen my life?" The pastor said, "No, but it will make whatever time you do have left seem like forever." It's just how you see things. Well, today I want you to know that one of the keys to abundance is to develop a spirit of generosity. And for that, we're going to go to one of the more classic miracles in the New Testament. And it's in the book of John, and it's printed here in your notes. So I'd like you to take out your notes with me. Clear your throats, because we're going to read it together out loud. All right? Here we go. Let's read this together. Go. "When Jesus looked up, He saw a great crowd coming toward Him. And He said to Philip, 'Where shall we buy bread for these people to eat?' He asked this only to test him, for He already had in mind what He was going to do." Push the pause button for a second. Did you know that every miracle you need, God already has prepared? Everything that you need for tomorrow and beyond, God has in His storeroom. And he's just simply waiting for you and I to access that through our faith. So you know what he'll do to in order to mature that faith, to surface that faith? Sometimes he tests our faith. Asks us to do something that our flesh abhors. But something in our spirit says, I got to do that. And will you respond to the spirit or succumb to the flesh? And when you do move with the spirit, a miracle ensues. God already knew what he was going to do, but he wanted these people involved, so he's going to test their faith. Will he do that with us? Absolutely. And by the way, remember, everything that God does isn't for him. It's for us. Let's continue. Philip answered him, 8 months' wages would not buy enough bread for each one to even have a bite. Another of his disciples, Andrew, Simon Peter's brother, spoke up. Hey, here's a boy with 5 small barley loaves and 2 fish, but how far will they go among so many? Jesus said, have the people sit down. Now there was plenty of grass in that place, and the men sat down, about 5,000 of them. Jesus then took the loaves, gave thanks, and distributed to those who were seated as much as they wanted. He did the same with the fish. And when they had all had enough to eat, he said to his disciples, now gather the pieces that are left over, let nothing be wasted. And so they gathered them and filled 12 baskets with the pieces of the 5 barley loaves left over by those who had eaten. What an amazing miracle. And in this one miracle, we are going to find the reasons why we give. And I'm going to enumerate 3 of them. And they're right there in your notes, and you can fill them in. So here's the first. When we give, like that little boy, when we give, would you write it in? We honor God. We honor God. Oh, wait a minute. You said, Wayne, you said when we give, it doesn't do God any good. No, but it's for us. Well, how does it honor God? Remember, God created us in his image. He created us in whose image? All right, so if God created us in his image, when we were born, it's not a factory setting that we look like him, act like him, speak like him, and think like him. Nuh-uh. No, we're actually born pretty bad. Very selfish. You look at kids, right? When their first words are mine, the second word is no. And so they're born. I tell my grandkids, you're born wrong. That's why you have to be born again. And so we're not in his image necessarily. We have to be taught. We have to learn. We have to choose to follow him and to say no to the flesh and yes to the spirit. So we're made in his image. Now, because we're in his image, what does God look like? Well, remember John 3:16. For God so loved the world that he... So is God a taking God? No, he's a... Okay. And Jesus, he came not to be served, but to serve and to give his life a ransom for many. So God in Christ is a giving God and sacrificially a giving God. So you see, when I give, I look more like God than when I withhold and hoard. And every time I give, and sacrificially at that, I move more into the image in which he created us. And if I refuse to and become selfish and am greedy and withhold, then I become less like God and more like the world. But if I say, no, I want to give, and I become more like him. And it just honors God like crazy. And now remember, it's not the act of giving. It's what happens in our heart to get us to this point. That's what he's looking for. If you want to develop a heart of compassion for the poor, often that kind of heart is only developed when you go face to face with a third world country. When you come back, something has happened. Isn't that right? You want to have compassion for people with cancer. You work in the cancer ward for a while. When you're face to face in that situation, something of your character has been recontoured, refashioned, and a greater, deeper compassion and empathy results. If you've been an athlete, you know that there's certain characteristics that are only learned on the gridiron. When you're there and you're struggling and you're fighting with pain and you overcome it and you win whatever the cost might be and you're competitive and you push yourself to a degree that you never thought you could have pushed yourself before. And those characteristics are only developed when you're out on the field. Now listen carefully. There are certain characteristics of God that will only be developed in generosity. No other way. Because he's working on something far deeper than the act. Let me tell you what happened to me. I was a part of a Rotary Club downtown, and I parked my car, and I was going to the Rotary Club, and I passed by this pretty large bus stop where a lot of the transit lines crisscross at, and so there's quite a few people. And as I walked by, there was a kind of a disheveled homeless man, and he was panhandling, asking people for a dollar. He had a dollar. And as I walked by him, the Lord just spoke to my heart and said, give him a dollar. It won't break your bank. And I religiously rationalized it out. No, God, thanks for the request, but he probably use it for alcohol or drugs, so I probably shouldn't give it to him just as a benefit to him, you know? So have you ever religiously rationalized your obedience? Any of you? Yeah, just one. Okay, God bless you, God bless you. Yeah, rest of you lie. And so I just said, yeah, he won't use it for food. If he used it for food, I rationalized, and I spoke to God. If he used it for food, I'd give it to him, but he's not. So God spoke to my heart and pushed back and said, well, if you want to make sure he uses it for food, just go to McDonald's and go buy him a hamburger and give it to him. And this is what I said, no way, that costs $3. So it's like the Lord said, so it's greed we're working on today, not your giving. And your ability to rationalize obedience right out religiously. And you've been doing that for far too long. Boy, did I feel convicted. That's it. See, it wasn't the act of giving. It was what God was doing in my heart to get me to that place that was surfaced in that act of giving, but it had to be revealed. See, often God reveals something in us that it's not the act. It's what our heart has to come to in sacrifice before we can do this. And God says, that's what I want to work on. That's the character quality that I wanted to shape. Well, I don't know about that, Wayne. Some people say, I work hard for my money. I work hard. It's my idea, not God, my idea that got the money. Let's read what Deuteronomy says. Would you read it with me? 8:18, go. But remember the Lord your God, for it is he who gives you the ability to produce wealth, and so confirms his covenant, which he swore to your forefathers as it is today. In other words, God is saying, I gave you that. Where do you think the idea came from? Your pea brain? No, I gave you an eternal idea. I'll give you the ability to create. God owns it all. And so what is he doing? He's inviting us into the process through which that can become reality, from a latent idea to reality. And he'll give us the power, the ability, the wisdom. He'll give you the innovation, the entrepreneurship. He'll give you the contacts. Where did it come from? Mars? God says, I will give you the ability to create wealth. He owns it all. He owns even the ideas. And God says, I'll give that to you. I'll give you the power to create wealth. I think God is more concerned about us being grateful than just about anything else. Because when I'm grateful, then I'm marking him out as the source of all my blessings. If I'm not grateful, it's like, well, whatever. It's like the guy who was late for a job interview, and so he was driving around the block looking for a parking spot, and there's none. They're all taken up. All the meters were taken up, and he starts crying out to God. He says, God, if you give me a parking space, God, I'll quit cussing. I'll be nice to my wife, and I'll quit drinking. God, just give me a parking spot, because I got to get this interview. All of a sudden, this car pulls out right in front of him, and he pulls in. He goes, oh, forget that promise, God. I found one. No problem, no problem. We're so quick. God is more concerned about our gratefulness than just about anything else. Because when we're grateful, He delights. He's honored to give us more. My grandkids, I'm trying to teach. I've got 8 grandkids. I got a few right here in the front row. But I've got 8 grandkids, and teaching them gratefulness is really tough. Isn't it true? When the kids are young and they get something from auntie or uncle, what do you have to say to them? Say thank you. Yeah, because they don't know how to say thank you. Being grateful. I've got one granddaughter that loves chicken McNuggets. And so she said, Papa, they called me Papa. Papa, can you get me some chicken McNuggets? I said, absolutely. Let's get some chicken McNuggets. So we went down and got some chicken McNuggets. And not just a regular size. We got a super size chicken McNuggets because I wanted a couple myself. So we get her that and some sauce. And boy, she was delighting in eating this stuff. Oh, man, she just loved it. And I thought, it looked pretty good. So I reached over and grabbed one, and I chomped on it. And first thing she said was, hey, that's mine. I said, what? She said, that's mine. I said, I bought them. I can take them. She said, that's mine. It's like, it didn't even calculate. That's mine. I said, no, it's not. I can buy it for you. I can take it. I could buy 10 times that amount of chicken McNuggets. It's not yours. It's mine. I gave it to you. You should be grateful. She said, no, it's mine. I said, I am the source of chicken McNuggets. I am the creator of chicken McNuggets. I am the chicken McNuggets. And then we laugh at that, but I wonder how many times God says the same thing. When God says, give that mine. No, I'm the creator. I give you the power to create. No, mine. You see, God's working on character and likeness deep within. You say, well, Wayne, why does God want us to do this, to give? It's because God doesn't want us to be a cul-de-sac. He wants us to be a conduit. See the difference? If it's a cul-de-sac, then whatever He gives, we keep, we hoard, we embrace, we hold on, we protect. But if we break out a little hole and let it go through us, do you know that God's storehouse is unending in His supply? That He can give not just to us, but through us an infinite amount more. And God wants to develop us into conduits so that He can give not only resources, but He can give love. We can give grace. Oh, He could give forgiveness. Oh, He could give blessing. Do you understand? And if we would all be that kind of people, just think what God could give to the world through His church. Oh, man, it's unfathomable. What do you call that? You call that little hole? It's called a tithe. Oh, what's that? The word tithe means first fruits. In the Old Testament, the word tithe means the first tenth. So that we're not a cul-de-sac, we break out and we give to God that first fruit, so the first tenth. And that starts the transition or the transformation from a cul-de-sac to a conduit. You see, back in the book of Ruth, if you want to know the beginnings or the inception of the tithe, you can go all the way back to Melchizedek. But let me start at Ruth, where in the agricultural age, people would harvest their barley crop and intentionally leave some on the ground. And so as they're cutting the barley and some drops, the owner would say, leave it. Don't go for it. Don't get it. Just leave it. Why? Because we want to leave some intentionally so that the poor can come after we've harvested. And here's the word, glean. And whenever you read that in the Bible, G-L-E-A-N, it means intentionally left behind crop in the name of the Lord for the poor. And they would glean. And that's how they would get their food. After a while, if you have a vineyard, let's say of 10 acres, they would leave 1 acre for the poor to gather. But after a while, if it weren't gathered, it would rot. So what they would do is, then they would gather, harvest all of their 10 acres of vineyard, and then the money from which they would receive from that 10 acres, they would take 1/10 or a tithe, and in the name of the Lord, distribute to the poor. So they would take 1 acre's worth of revenue. Then the agricultural age gave way to the industrial age, where you didn't have agricultural acreage, but we had a paycheck from our labors. So then we take off the first tenth and give that so that it can go towards in the name of the Lord ministry. And so that's what it is that turns us from cul-de-sacs to conduits. It's that breaking that little piece open is called a tithe. Why does God want us to tithe? Well, let's read what it says here on the board. It's not in your notes. It'll come up on the board. Read it with me. Go. The purpose of tithing is to teach you to always put God first in your lives. You see, whatever you want God to bless, put Him first in. You want God to bless your marriage? Put Him first in your marriage. You want God to bless your dating? Put Him first in your dating. You want God to bless your finances? Put Him first in your finances. And it's a very simple, simple principle. I tell these girls in New Hope, when you come of age and you start dating, and the guy comes, your boyfriend comes to pick you up in his car, I want you to put your Bible between him and you on that date. And these girls go, why? I said, because if they try to get to you, they have to get over Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John first. And if they succeed in that, they get the axe right after. It's to put God first. Well, when you put God first, what does it do? I'll tell you what it does. It connects your heart to God and not to any possession. Well, what do you mean? You see, whatever you invest in, it connects your heart to it. Think about it and the investments you would make. If you put $1 million into a beautiful sailboat, you can be in church, but your heart is out on the open sea. If you invest in a stock, you're always checking that stock. You're connected to that stock. You're always looking at it. If you invest in a business, you could be at a dinner with your wife, but you're thinking about that business. I remember when Starbucks had its IPO, initial public offering, and I knew this was going to be a big thing. I could just see it. So I took all my savings and I invested it in Starbucks. I just gave it all. And then as more came in, I'd invest more and more and more. But I tell you, because of my investment in Starbucks, guess what I was doing every day? Checking, did it go up? Boy, it went up, I'd have a party. It went down, I went to a psychiatrist. It was just crazy. I would drink 4, 5, 6 cups of Starbucks a day because I knew every cup would make my stock go up just a little bit more. If I had an intravenous line, I would have done that. You see, whatever you invest in, your heart gets connected to. And that's why the Bible says, where your treasure is, there shall your... He doesn't say where your heart is, you'll invest. No, where you invest, your heart's going to get connected to. Let's read what it says here. It's in the book of Matthew. Let's read it together. Go. Do not store up for yourselves treasures on earth, where moth and rust destroy and where thieves break in and steal. But store up for yourselves treasures in... heaven, where moth and rust do not destroy and where thieves do not break in and steal. Here it is, for where your treasure is, there your heart will be also. What you give to causes your heart to connect up. And I can't think of a better place I want my heart connected to than to the things of God. And so early on, Anna and I decided we were going to tithe, not based on our abundance or our paycheck, but a choice. However much we had, we would give the first 10. And I cannot tell you how it connects your heart to God. It's the best investment we've ever made. You see, when you give, you honor God. But number two, would you write down, not only does it honor God and bless God, but when we give, it blesses others. It blesses others.
You've just heard part one of a message entitled, A Generous God, by Pastor Wayne Cordero of New Hope Christian Fellowship in Honolulu. Tomorrow, we'll learn that when we give, we not only bless others, we bless ourselves. We hope you'll join us. We invite you to visit our website where you'll find more helpful resources from Pastor Wayne, his books, music, DVDs, podcasts, and much more. That web address is enewhope.org. Again, that's www.enewhope.org. Until next time, for Pastor Wayne and all the Ohana at New Hope, God bless you and aloha.
What if there were a place where you could discover, develop, and fulfill your dreams? A place where passion and creativity thrive in a community pursuing something greater than themselves. That place is New Hope Christian College.
New Hope Christian College is a place where everyone knows everyone. Your teachers really do care about you, they want you to succeed, and they're willing to partner with you to do whatever it takes to make that happen.
The education that I've received at New Hope has really equipped me to graduate market ready.
No matter where you come from, New Hope Christian College is a place where you can come to find community.
There's a place for you at New Hope Christian College. For more information, go online to newhope.edu or call 1-800-322-2638. New Hope Christian College, a place where dreams are released.